Good
morning, colleagues. Welcome back to our meeting. Now, last panel, which deals with the impact of COVID-19 in the EU's internal security, which is a reason for major concern. Europol has collected information from the member states and published reports on how criminals have operated during the pandemic. In the 2020 report, it shows how crimes relating to COVID-19 spread throughout Europe in 2020 with a significant impact and long-lasting, which COVID-19 has increased the activity of criminal gangs in Europe and undermining the ability by member states of fighting threats to internal security. On top of that, the working group on threats from crimes relating to COVID-19 and the answers by authorities, made up of heads of police of different countries as well as Interpol, which is co-chaired by Mr. Rizzi, identified priority areas relating to fraud, relating to health products, an increase in child sexual abuse through images online and videos online, and the need to identify and monitor indicators relating with the infiltration of criminal groups, gangs in the economy. So we await with expectation the exchange of views on this matter. And I hand over the floor to Catherine de Bol, the Executive Director of Europol. Madam Director, you have the floor.
Madam Chair, honourable members, dear ladies and gentlemen, since the onset of the pandemic, Europol issued 33 strategic reports regarding the impact of COVID, and the latest one was published in November. The next one will be published later on this month. We have also engaged in several prevention campaigns and several awareness campaigns on our website to inform citizens of possible COVID-19 related offenses and how to protect the children online. In the beginning of the crisis, we did set up a Europol platform for experts, Vroom, to provide law enforcement partners with a secure platform to exchange strategic information on matters related to the pandemic. And in March 2021, we will present the new serious and organized crime threat assessment, and we will include a dedicated chapter on COVID-19. I also co-chair with the Italian police a working group on COVID-19 where we discuss the security challenges related to the pandemic. My colleague, Deputy Chief of the Italian Police, Prefetto Rizzi, will elaborate on this during his intervention. The most impacted crime areas continue to be the supply of counterfeit and substandard products, organized crime, property crime, cybercrime, and financial crime. The current rollout of the COVID-19 vaccine presents additional lucrative opportunities for counterfeiters, though in a limited manner, we have already seen a few offers of fake vaccines appearing on the dark web. Fake vaccines could also be injected in the legal market for distribution. Since the outbreak of the pandemic, the number of COVID-19 themed domains to facilitate cybercrime activities did increase, with COVID-19 themed malware, phishing attacks, and ransomware. The production and distribution of online child sexual abuse material has remained a grave concern over the course of the pandemic. Fraudsters have quickly adapted business-as-usual fraud schemes fitting the COVID-19 narrative in order to exploit widespread anxiety, ensuing economic hardship, targeting individual citizens, businesses, and public organizations. During the crisis, organized crime groups exploited legal business structure to orchestrate fraud schemes, facilitate the distribution of counterfeit goods and money laundering activities. With potential economic hardship unfolding, it is expected that different types of fraud schemes, including the defrauding economic stimulus packages, will proliferate and the criminal infiltration into the legal economy will intensify. On this last point, as financial efforts are made by the EU to boost the economic recovery, we remain strongly committed to protecting the financial interests of the European Union. Effective cooperation with EPO, OLAF and Eurojust and national authorities will be more important than ever, and the European Financial and Economic Crime Center will play a key role. The threat posed by terrorism remained significant during the last year. We have also seen extremist schemes framing the virus to their own ideological narratives. The increased importance of the digital environment has become an even more fertile ground for the dissemination of malicious narratives. The COVID-19 pandemic made us rethink at Europol how we work in order for law enforcement to continue to cooperate virtually. Europol rapidly adapted to the crisis, equipping our operational staff and the liaison officers with appropriate means, mobile offices, to ensure information flow and a secure video conference application. Also, Europol hosted one of the largest operations to date during the pandemic, Operation Emma, which led to the dismantling of EncroChat. COVID-19 will leave a heritage of long-lasting effects in the EU criminal landscape. Europol and the national law enforcement agencies need to be ready to face these challenges, increasingly linked to the digital dimension. Equipping Europol with the adequate resources, legislation, cooperation with the private parties, and innovation are key aspects. Thank you very much.
Muito obrigada, Mrs. De Bol.
Thank you, Mrs. De Bol. Now I will give the floor to Mr. Vittorio Risi, Deputy Director of Public Security in Italy and Chair, Co-Chair of the Working Group of Heads of Police on COVID-19.
Authorities, honorable members of the JPSG, Executive Director of Europol. First of all, let me thank the co-chairs for inviting me to this prestigious meeting. I would like to start with a general remark. At a moment of a global crisis, each important challenge requires a global alliance. I'm thinking of climate, health, security. Following this logic, the Italian law enforcement have tried to build a common strategy both at national and at international level. To wait without acting would have been an error. I'm mentioning the national context at the outset just because Italy has been the first country in Europe to face the pandemic. Our model, developed by the Italian law enforcement, could constitute a good practice in a crisis situation. The spread of the virus has an impact on police forces in many respects. I will only focus on the most important points. Resilience. Police officers are there to protect legality, but are also victims of the virus. Resilience is not just an emotional challenge, but its organization, methodology, and procedures to be observed. We need information and training in order to be able to continue to protect citizens' lives and safety. Organizational models. Only the adoption of flexible models can guarantee the efficiency and the continuity of a public service. Organizational and sanitary rules must be adopted strictly and swiftly. Identification of vulnerabilities in the economic and social fabric. A risk analysis is needed to prevent the infiltration of organized crime into the legal economy. Despite the immediate drop in crime rates during the lockdown, we have never lowered our guard. Rather, we have raised the level of attention even further. As a young Amanda Gorman said, we have learned that quiet isn't always peace. Based on these considerations, we have taken the necessary management and organizational measures concerning health, and we have shared them with colleagues from other countries, both at bilateral and multilateral level, with a view to seeking the best policy possible. This strategy has rewarded us. Indeed, the infection rate in the Italian police forces has been lower than or equal to the infection rate in the Italian population, although policing is among the professions most at risk of infection. Regarding criminal analysis, we have immediately established a single interagency hub, the monitoring and analysis body for the monitoring and continued analysis of present and potential risks. The Minister of the Interior has entrusted me to chair this body, and we work with all national police forces, the judiciary, commerce and industry trade associations, the banking world, and the Italian Financial Information Unit. In this way, we can provide political decision makers with a risk analysis that points out potential future problems and vulnerabilities so that the government can do what needs to be done quickly and well. It's a working method used in Italy for a number of joint law enforcement services to ensure unified action, dialogue, and saving of resources. For instance, international police cooperation, for which my directorate represents all Italian police forces. Therefore, all information flow passes through our single point of contact that handles all messages concerning transnational crime and the search for fugitive. Another example is database management, where we have implemented the full interoperability of all information systems. Using their devices, police officers can directly search all national and international databases that are fully interoperable. With just one query, they can gain access to a whole wealth of information. Thus, the monthly rate of queries has gone up from 3,000 in 2015 to 40 million today, with an exponential increase in the number of hits, which respect to red notice only, arrests of internationally wanted person, have increased by over 70% in 2 years. Returning to the monitoring and analysis body, it would have been anachronistic to stop at national borders. Therefore, we proposed to Catherine de Bolle, who agreed with enthusiasm providing content, the idea of setting up at a Europol a working group on COVID-19, because what was happening in some countries could have been a symptom of what was going to happen soon also in other contexts. At a time of great uncertainty, we need as much information as possible to reduce the threat from crime. Our goal has been to outline potential scenarios in order to intervene before they become real threats. Catherine de Bolle and I I've created a working group comprised of 9 European countries plus Interpol, which has held 3 meetings so far, including an in-person meeting in Italy last September. Our discussions have focused on strategic topics with a strong operational value, which have also provided a contribution to the new EU policy cycle. We speak about COVID economy, dark money, cybercrime, protection of vulnerable victims, hate crime. In particular, our focus has been the relation between the virus and the mafias that have long abandoned their traditional criminal methods. No longer only intimidation and violence, but above all corruption and the infiltration of the legitimate economy through sophisticated financial transactions. Financial markets are more convenient for their multi-million criminal business. And we must never forget what Nathan Rothschild said: buy when there is blood in the streets. Europol has produced a number of strategic reports on the importance of the pandemic, also taking into account the finding of the analysis carried out by the Italian monitoring body. Among other things, the innovative aspect of these reports is a stronger operational approach. As a result, with regard to terrorism and organized crime, these reports have had a major impact on the European Commission communication in the second half of 2020 and on the activity of the EU Council. The challenge we are facing together is to arrive to a census of operations, arrest, seizure, and confiscation with comparable data from the various countries. Our aim is to have an homogeneous basis for analysis and to develop prevention and enforcement strategies in the time of COVID-19. In addition, I think it's appropriate to say here that Italy is closely following the work on the review of the Europol regulation and on the implementation of the Europol strategy 2020+. A new season of international cooperation is about to start, and Europol is working for a safer Europe, offering a wider range of operational tools through a new legal basis. Among the ongoing actions strongly supported by Italy, Europol is investing in innovation technology and in operational activities, also with an increasing use of joint operational teams. In conclusion, in my capacity as spokesperson of the Italian law enforcement and co-chair of the COVID-19 co-working group, I want to reassure you that we are working with utmost dedication, mindful of our duty to act according to the ethics of responsibility. We are well aware of the serious threats facing us and the topics on the agenda of our forthcoming meeting on the 12th of February focus on our most precious assets. First of all, health. With the risk of organized crime infiltration into vaccine distribution, and then the future of younger generations. The pandemic has completely changed their lives, and our attention is on children as both victims and offenders. We leave our present knowing that there cannot be security without sharing knowledge and information. This challenge can only be met by working together through multilateral cooperation. Europol is our common house to make Europe and our countries safer place. Thank you for attention.
Muito obrigada. Muito obrigada, senhor.
Thank you, Mr. Vittorio Risi, for your presentation. And now I will hand the floor to my colleague, Mr. Lopez Aguilar.
Obrigado, ainda Isabel. We see here in this final slot of us this working morning of our GPSG joint venture that important EU legislative initiatives have been finalized in the recent years in order precisely to improve the efficiency of police cooperation within the area of freedom, security, and justice of the European Union. Initiatives which include a new architecture for EU information systems and their interoperability. We spent a substantial amount of time and energy in securing the interoperability package, which was the last delivery of the latest British commissioner so far, Julian King, with full respect for fundamental rights, of course. So I am pleased we have today the debate in which we could hear from not only from the experts we just heard of, but also as to their views regarding the strengthening of police cooperation in the EU with the members, which are listed in the speaking list, willing to bring this debate to life. So I would now, I suggest we give the floor to the members of the GPSG, both European Parliament and National Parliaments. But please let me announce that we are limiting the questions to a maximum 2 minutes. And after those questions, of course, there should be some room for the guest speakers, Catherine de Bol, the director of Europol, and Valerio Rizzi, we just heard of, to reply, to respond, to react. But please, let's go to the list and make sure it'll be 2 minutes each. Okay, we're getting started with Sofía Acedo Reyes, del Senado de España. Señora Acedo, por favor, tiene la palabra.
Buen día.
Morning. Thank you very much. I'm Sofía Acedo Reyes, member of the Popular Party Parliamentary Group of the Senate. First of all, let me congratulate the technical team, thanks to which with absolute normality and we have been able to hold this meeting on the follow-up to Europol. Next, I would like to convey a brief reflection on police cooperation in the framework of the southern EU border in Spain as regards the detection of the new migratory routes and the control of migratory irregular flows and how this has a direct impact on the internal security of the EU. Latest events have clearly shown the need to reinforce the police cooperation mechanisms, not only in the framework of the EU, but of this body with third countries, and the obligation to adjust police resources to actual circumstances for the protection of our external borders, bearing in mind security, since the challenge is to face this issue within the common EU strategy and to keep on fighting against organized crime, mafias, which continue to traffic in human beings and lately even traffic in minors. It is obvious that to control irregular external borders is not enough to control irregular migratory flows. So limiting myself to these specific issues, I would like to convey some remarks on security in our southern external border and the vulnerability in this pandemic time. Our external borders are closed to certain third countries such as Morocco through the ground borders in the towns of Ceuta and Melilla, third countries from where most of migrant people come to the EU and with whom we have important cooperation agreements in the fight against fundamentalist terrorism, drug trafficking and control of irregular migratory flows. Among other reasons, this closing of borders and the impossibility to use other channels has entailed a huge increase of the arrival of persons irregularly through the Canary Islands migratory route. In 2020, 23,000 people arrived to the Canary Islands through these routes, and in January, 1,069 persons. All this has entailed, apart from the important collapse of the resources of these territories, given the huge size of this phenomenon, a weakening of the trust, the confidence in the protection of our borders, which clearly shows the vulnerability of these borders, which leads me to the need to tackle this issue. First, to assess the effectiveness of the resources we make available for the protection of our external borders as regards internal security, promote and boost, apart from police cooperation in the framework of the Union and among the different specialized agencies, cooperation between the Union and third countries through international agreements as necessary element to guarantee the success of our operation against crime, with dealing with human trafficking.
Monica Bartos from Hungary, and then it'll be Javier Zarzalejos, European Parliament. But please, I remind you, try to phrase your speaking points to a maximum 2 minutes so that we can handle with the timing without exceeding it, please, because we're in the final track of this 2 days working session. The floor goes to you, Ms. Bartos.
Thank you for the floor, Mr. Chair. First of all, on behalf of the Hungarian National Assembly, I would like to thank you for your hard and outstanding work. The COVID-19 global pandemic poses enormous challenges in all areas. On top of all, it has put authorities responsible for counter-terrorism and combat against violent extremism in a new position as well. In cases such as pandemics, the development of cross-border police cooperation could lead to increased usage of European and international information systems and databases. It could be very useful and could provide a great relevance if states would place fully detailed alerts in the Europol database and in the Schengen information system. Although the level of terrorism threat in Hungary has not changed due to the epidemic, the challenges posed by the pandemic have manifested in the higher activity, especially in the online sphere of extremist persons or organizations. Based on the lessons learned as to the pandemic situation, in our opinion, it can be stated that significant assistance to law enforcement cooperation between police agencies from Europol would constitute providing member state counter-terrorist units with their own protected video teleconferences channel and equipment in order to host operational meetings safely and flexibly. On the long term, it would be a huge step forward in the improvement of police cooperation if member states would make their own police databases available for each other. Re-expressing my appreciation and gratitude for their work, I would like to close my comment with one question. I read in the documents about the newly established Innovation Lab, but learned little about its goals and operation. Which are the main research areas of the laboratory? Are there any that have been set specifically to combat against forms of crime in the context of the epidemic? Thank you.
Thank you so much. Now is el señor Javier Zarzalejos del Parlamento Europeo, and then it'll be Duarte Marques de Portugal, Asamblea da República. Señor Zarzalejos.
Thank you, Chair, and thanks to Madame de Waal and Director Ricci. Europol has been provided with very valuable information and assessment about the impact of COVID-19 on crime. And what we have seen is the evolving nature of crime and how it has been adapting to the changing circumstances and the COVID scenario, with new opportunities for criminal organizations to take advantage of the situation created by the pandemic. In the context of the pandemic, both Madame de Bol, Director de Bol, and Director Ricci, and also in the papers that have been distributed before, they have stated that organized crime is ready to infiltrate into the legal economy to profit from European Union COVID recovery efforts. That is something that should be a cause for concern, and especially for us in the European Parliament and the European institutions, but that will certainly require a very strong and tight police cooperation. So I would like Director de Bol to ask you to elaborate a bit more on the Europol assessment of this risk, and at the same time tell us what can Europol do about this. Thank you.
Gracias, señor Sassalejos. Duarte Marques de Portugal, Assemblée de la République. Et après, il sera Ludovic Hay, le sénateur de la République française.
Obrigado, senhor Presidente e senhora Presidente.
Thank you, co-chairs. Thank you for the guest speakers for their magnificent presentations. Two very simple issues. Sometimes we get the feeling, and I'm glad that we have the director of Europol, because you didn't answer my questions yesterday. Maybe you can answer them today. The feeling is, and given your presentation, is that transnational criminality, the usual, was reduced or stopped with the pandemic, but cybercrime increased significantly. As usual, reality and the digital market was alive before legislation, so that's usual. Two concrete questions as follows. Sometimes we get the feeling that Europol has a very advanced technological capacity, and there's a great difference, or there should be a great difference, between the information tools of each police force in each member state, i.e. there's an imbalance both in terms of the type of information and in information tools which all have, which make available to Europol, and that damages the efficiency of this police force, of this agency, I'm sorry. Also, in this period of digital tools, many member states, for example, don't have the same capacity of certifying technologies that others have. Sometimes we have governments using technology, simple technology, which is accessible to all citizens when they should use state-of-the-art technology certified and which can't be violated. Sometimes it's governments that give us the bad example in the use of technology. And my question is, shouldn't Europe have a technological autonomy and not depend on information systems from other countries and other blocks to be able to certify better? And I will finish with another simple question. In Portugal, we discuss that police forces don't cooperate amongst themselves. And we get the feeling also that at the European level, the different institutions, Frontex, Eurojust, are not cooperating amongst themselves, which would make this security policy more efficient. So what do we have to do in that level? Thank you.
Obrigado. Ludovic Ayer, the Senate de la République Française. And then it'll be Elena Junceva, European Parliament.
Merci, Président. Vous m'entendez? Okay. Mes chers collègues, la pandémie de la COVID-19, instrumentalisée par des acteurs étatiques et non étatiques, a créé un contexte de menaces nouvelles, dont la dangerosité sera accrue par l'utilisation à des fins criminelles des nouvelles technologies. Les vols de données et les logiciels malveillants sont en augmentation constante. De plus, la 5G en particulier pourrait avoir des implications fortes sur les services répressifs et judiciaires des États membres, ainsi que sur nos capacités de cybersécurité. La crise sanitaire constitue malheureusement une excellente illustration de ces menaces hybrides qui doivent nous conduire à mieux préparer nos sociétés européennes à les affronter. Pour faire face à ce phénomène de nature intrinsèquement transfrontière, la coopération policière européenne doit être renforcée et devenir plus opérationnelle. À cette fin, il me paraît indispensable de mieux partager l'information. La révision du mandat d'Europol devrait y contribuer, mais également la poursuite du développement d'Eurojust et d'une plus grande coopération avec le parquet européen. Le renseignement peut aussi tirer profit d'une coopération renforcée. Je pense plus particulièrement à l'initiative du président Macron d'instituer le Collège du renseignement en Europe, lancé à Paris en mars 2019 et qui réunit déjà l'ensemble des États membres, rejoints dernièrement par la Norvège et la Suisse. Ce collège contribue à trois niveaux de dialogue stratégique entre décideurs politiques et communautés de renseignement, entre monde universitaire et société civile et communautés de renseignement, et aussi entre services de renseignement eux-mêmes afin de développer une culture minimum commune, voire à terme un parcours de formation intégré pour des professionnels de renseignement européens. Toutefois, nous le savons, l'efficacité de l'action européenne, en particulier celle des enquêtes numériques, est limitée par des obstacles juridiques en matière d'obtention et de conservation des données aux fins de preuves numériques. Nous en parlions encore ensemble hier. Les effets des décisions de la Cour de justice de l'Union européenne depuis l'arrêt TD2 pourraient induire des difficultés sur le renseignement des services répressifs, mais aussi judiciaires en Europe. C'est pourquoi il me paraît indispensable que la Commission présente des propositions visant à surmonter les difficultés liées au cryptage des données, afin que les preuves numériques puissent être collectées et utilisées légalement par les autorités compétentes, tout en préservant la fiabilité des services basés sur des technologies de chiffrement. De même, l'Union européenne devrait se doter rapidement d'un régime de conservation des données permettant de répondre aux besoins opérationnels des services répressifs et judiciaires, prenant en compte les exigences et la jurisprudence de la CJUE et des tribunaux nationaux et respectueux des droits fondamentaux. Pourrions-nous, mes chers collègues, connaître les échéances en la matière? Je vous remercie.
Merci à vous. Now it's Elena Joncheva, the European Parliament, and then it'll be Jacek Kutsepa, Poland, the same, Polish same.
Merci, Monsieur le Président, de me donner la parole et merci aussi aux intervenants pour les présentations détaillées. Covid-19 a mis notre société à l'épreuve. Cela a également donné aux criminels de nouvelles possibilités et nous savons bien sûr à quelle vitesse ils s'adaptent, les criminels. C'est très bien que Europol a identifié rapidement les nouvelles menaces. Et à la lumière de cela, pourriez-vous me dire combien d'affaires les États membres ont demandé jusqu'à présent au soutien l'Europol pour les infractions liées au Covid? Et aussi, je demande surtout les délits impliquant des équipements médicaux, de produits pharmaceutiques et sanitaires contrefaits. Ce type de délit présente un risque important pour la santé et la sécurité publique dans le contexte actuel et les citoyens doivent savoir qu'ils seront protégés. Des opérations policières conjointes régulières dans les domaines ont également un effet préventif sur celles qui visent à exploiter.
With a view to make the most of this situation, do you foresee operations like the SHIELD operation, which has already been carried out? Now, terrorism from the right wing, which has an impact on internal security, they have a more important role online. Have you carried out a more in-depth analysis about this particular phenomenon of right-wing extremism? Thank you.
Jacek Kurczepa, Polish same Poland, and then it'll be Cohen Metsu, de la Chambre des députés de la Belgique.
Comportements criminels sont générés liés à la rentabilité de la pratique de distribution de faux vaccins et de préparations médicales, de disponibles et de l'appareil de sauvetage.
With regards this issue, the problem is that we have seen that there are actions that violate the principles of solidarity, and quickly that has increased, namely in the purchase of vaccines, and so that's not a good example. The threat of crime increases because of the restrictions on the supply side, and it's clear that we have to make the most of syringes which aren't used to the full, and access to we find that the distribution has had an impact by the position of police forces. We have to think on the integrity of people, on the honesty of people, so we want to thank all those who try to help us in this difficult time of the pandemic.
La Belgique y después Maite Pagasa del Parlamento Europeo.
No statement coming from Belgium, only one general question, which we're looking forward to receive an answer. We know that Europol is monitoring for more than 1 year now the impact of the COVID pandemic. I'm looking forward to receive some more information about the most recent threats that they discover or monitor, and how Europol is responding to this. I also know that we are nearly at the finish of this interesting session, so I will not repeat the previous questions from my predecessors and remain with this solitary question. I thank you.
Thank you. Maite Pagasa del Parlamento Europeo und danach Susan Mittag de Deutsche Bundestag.
Sí, Presidente, muchísimas gracias.
Hello, thank you very much, Chair. I have two questions. One on critical infrastructures and the second on the emergence of new types of crimes. The Commission launched last December a new directive to reinforce our resilience in terms of critical infrastructures, precisely in the framework of this pandemic. There are provisions concerning the support to be given by the Commission to the Member States and to critical entities. Is it envisaged for Europol to play any role in the implementation of this directive? And if not, would it be interesting for Europol to cooperate in this matter? Secondly, Europol has warned us on the selling and illegal selling of false negative certificates of COVID-19, and being aware of the seriousness of this fact and its impact on the life of people as well as that of other type of fraud products, which are critical now to protect us from this pandemic. I would like to know which is the Europol strategy to fight this type of counterfeits of vaccinations or tests. When did you detect these counterfeits, especially as regards the negative COVID certificates? And how could you inform us, or could you elaborate on how you learnt about this? How are you going to fight this phenomenon? Because it is crucial for us to have this type of information. Thank you.
Susan Mittag, the Deutsche Bundestag. And then it'll be Nick Preville, Slovenian House. Please. Susan, bitte.
Herzlichen Dank für das Wort und Dank auch an Herrn Rizzi. Dieser besondere Fokus auf die COVID-19 und organisierte Kriminalität.
Well, thank you very much for addressing this very important issue. So I'm very happy that you put this issue, impact of COVID-19, on the agenda. In the background information we received before the meeting, there was mention of infiltration by organized criminal groups of the illegal economy and also scams in relation to European recovery measures, something which was also highlighted by Dr. Rizzi earlier. In this context, I would like to point out that with regard to the Green Deal and other European issues such as the carbon emissions trading, these are also areas which might be prone to fraud and crime, and also the issue of real estate, the purchase of real estate. Do you have any indications that crime has increased in those areas? And I would also like to know whether there is cooperation going on between member states in order to counter or at least minimize the fraud risk related to recover measures.
And then Saskia Brickmont, du Parlement européen.
Oh, hello again. Thank you for this interesting debate, and I would just like to make some comments. Yes, we have some data. It's been almost a year of this COVID situation, and we actually note with a great concern that the latest data shows that this pandemic has a negative consequences also when it comes to crime. Actually, the crime has not stopped, but it has instead offered grounds for development of these new forms of crimes and also the exploit of this current COVID situation. I think that the impact of pandemic on crime has been reflected primarily in a rise of cybercrime and also, as my previous colleague said of sale of counterfeit protective masks and also disinfectants, and we are seeing now also the tests and medicine and also vaccinations, which will, of course, need further discussion and looking into. Also, we detect this in Slovenia. Of great concerns are also the facts of increases of online sexual exploitation of children. I think that this is an issue that requires our most utmost attention. As such despicable acts have an extremely negative consequences to the future lives of children. We are also realizing that human trafficking related to migration has increased, and we will have to act something about that also. The pandemic has also an impact on terrorism and extremism, which manifests itself particularly as a reason for consolidating ideological views. Moreover, the pandemic affects also the spread of fake news and also the rise of domestic violence. Therefore, it's very important for Europol monitors and process this criminal intelligence, coordinates investigations into current crisis and conduction preventions, campaigns on the criminal threats. So we have to imperative for successfully attacking the current crisis to protect fundamental values of EU. I'm out of time, but let me just finally, my dear colleagues, say this. Brief comment before the Slovenian presidency and our next meeting, because I will unfortunately have to leave this conference due to the urgent obligations. Slovenia is actively preparing for the presidency and, of course, our ninth meeting of the JPSG in Brussels, which will take place there. And, of course, if the epidemiological situations associated with COVID-19 calms down enough, we are hoping and we really want for all of us to meet in person. So we will let you everything know. And thank you very much and good luck to you all. Thank you.
Thank you. Saskia Brickmont, and then it will be Maximus Karakopoulos, Greece, Folie ton Hellenon.
Merci, Monsieur le Président. Merci pour votre rapport et votre présentation qui montre bien les défis qui nous attendent dans l'ère Covid et post-Covid et l'importance de continuer à sensibiliser et informer le public, d'où ma première question. concernant les campagnes de sensibilisation et d'information.
In relation to the awareness campaign carried out by the agency, how is that made available to the member states, to the police forces who are on the front line? And I want to know about the tools and the challenges which you are facing in the field of information, the fake news, and how do you guarantee that good information reaches citizens? So these are issues which I'd like to ask you, and also the Europol strategy concentrates on fighting child sexual abuse online. Obviously, it's one of the aspects of the problem. It's important, obviously, but today we are witnessing to a movement of liberation of freedom of speech on incest, and the Council of Europe has fought in this area. And when somebody knows the aggressor, can Europol develop a new policy on child sexual abuse not online? And we have many serious situations which has a negative impact, very serious negative impact. And finally, increase in criminal activity, the weakness of the social crisis and economic crisis has led to a environment to carry out more crimes, and that has more influence in our society. So in terms of money laundering also is another area which we'd like to know what actions are foreseen in this field from the point of view of the legislative package to be proposed by the Commission in this field. What are your views on European financial and crime, etc.? Thank you.
Maximus Karakopoulos und danach kommt Axel Voss vom Europäischen Parlament.
The unprecedented and prolonged pandemic, the crisis, the measures taken to tackle it have thoroughly changed the norms on the basis of which our communities and societies operate. And thus, law enforcement agencies have assumed an additional task, and that is to avert behaviors which could possibly lead to a rapid spread of COVID-19. And of course, the police officers are also running the risk of being infected, as Vittorio Ricci said earlier. And so the limitations that are imposed as compulsory must be seen as society self-defense and not as repressive government methods. It is unacceptable to have irresponsible voices heard in various European countries making statements against health protection and safety measures, even supporting big gatherings. A heightened sense of responsibility is required by all and for all. At this juncture, the use of computers and the internet by all age groups has skyrocketed, including people aged 70 or more. And that has made it therefore even more necessary to contain and check fake news, which has evolved into a scourge for humankind. There are even fraud schemes committed online. Counterfeit tests and vaccines circulate online, especially as regards the pandemic as such, about measures to take it to limit it, the vaccines, about such matters. You see, there is abundant fake news, preposterous info circulating through the web, causing fear and illusions. The outcomes of such propaganda are obvious in the behaviors of individuals who refute the existence of the virus and consequently impact negatively on helping contain the pandemic. They also give rise to social unrest and upheaval, so we need a European shield against fake news. There's the new threat, not just the virus, but fake news. So how can Europol here and now deal with the threat of fake news and conspiracy theories that are corroding and eroding the whole venture of protecting the citizens and protecting our democracy? Thank you.
Ok, Faristos, Axel Voss e poi viene Caterina Chinnici, ancora Parlamento Europeo.
Sehr geehrter Herr Vorsitzender, bin ich jetzt dran, oder?
May I speak? Thank you. Thank you for giving me the floor, and I would also like to extend my thanks to Catherine de Bol and all the other speakers for their contributions and presentations. I would also like to thank the director of Europol for the huge commitment to counter new forms of crime emerging in the context of COVID-19. Many issues have already been addressed by previous speakers, but there's one issue I would like to raise where we need more information. That's the issue of cooperation with third parties or private parties. I think here we do need a clearly defined legal basis in order to make that waterproof. And then there was the issue of innovation, research and innovation. What does this exactly mean? Are we talking about a new type of technology, or are we talking about app solutions to be provided to police forces to enable them to step up their exchange, to have a more mobile exchange, if you like, by using state-of-the-art applications? And in addition to that, maybe we should talk more about data analysis. How can data analysis be improved? That is data analysis on the basis of different structures, different languages. I think there is need for improvement in that area. And also looking ahead, where are the deficiencies in existing cooperation, and what recommendations should be issued with regard to better prevention? Thank you.
E la parola. E poi, infine, Valentina Cornelli della Camera dei Deputati italiana.
Rina Kinichi, you have the floor.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Thanks so much. I'd like to thank Ms. Ball and Mr. Rizzi for their presentation, for the important and the precious work that both Europol and the Italian law enforcement authorities are carrying on within the Working Group on COVID-19 crime threats. Pandemic crisis has shown once again how strong is criminal ability to adapt the modus operandi to changed scenarios. Counterfeit and substandard goods, cybercrime, child sexual abuse, fraud schemes and financial crime are significant and alarming signal of that ability. Law enforcement response must therefore be up to these increasing challenges, and I consider that Europol's rules is in enhancing cooperation at EU level is of utmost importance. One of the most alarming issues is currently the risk of infiltration of organized criminal group in the legal economy, and even at the moment in a vaccine distribution. In this respect, I have two questions. Ms. de Bol, how can we strengthen prevention at EU level in the fight against organized crime? And Mr. Rizzi, which operational instruments do law enforcement authorities need to effectively cooperate at international level in the fight against the organized criminal group? Thank you so much.
Grazie. Valentina Cornelli, della Camera dei Deputati. Onorevole Cornelli, lei è in collegamento? L'avevo prenotata, onorevole Cornelli? Onorevole Cornelli, non ci riesce, ti dispiace, veramente. Non la vediamo, non la sentiamo.
So unfortunately we can't hear you or see you.
Sì, sì, onorevole Cornelli. No. No. Apparentemente no. Then I suggest we hear now 5 minutes. from each of our guest speakers. Getting started with Catherine de Bol, director of Europol, and then it'll be il signore Rizzi, Vincenzo Rizzi, Valerio Rizzi, come rappresentante del gruppo di sicurezza italiano. Ok. Director de Bol, if you want to react, respond, make yes. your comments, please.
Thank you very much, Mr. Aguilar, and thank you all for this very interesting discussion. Regarding the migrant smuggling, indeed, the pressure is very high on the southwestern border of the EU. We are working together with the Spanish authorities to support them, also for secondary movements, and our European Migrant Smuggling Center is very much engaged. We also had several operations together with the Spanish authorities to tackle trafficking in human beings and migrant smuggling. Regarding innovation, why did we launch the Innovation Lab? Because indeed we see that in different member states there are different technologies used, and the level of the high level and the standards of technology differ in different member states. Second, we also saw that duplication at European level was there. And we now see that technological developments, they really shape the security challenges, but also the security responses. That is why we are very pleased with the decision of the Council in October 2019 to launch the Innovation Lab. It has four functions. First, projects. We support the H2020 project. The projects are initiated by the member states to develop innovative tools and to provide solutions to serve operational needs to all the law enforcement agencies in the whole of the Union. Second, an observatory. We have to make the assessment of the technologies, the existing one and those who are in the pipeline, to understand the pros and the cons of each technological development. Third, a network of innovators, people who are really dedicated to innovation in law enforcement, have to come together to share their expertise and to share their knowledge. And we do this at Europol level. And then fourth, the EU Innovation Hub for Internal Security. This is an coordination mechanism to support the innovation labs by sharing innovation information and by sharing knowledge. We also engage with the different EU agencies in this, like Frontex, EULISA, CEPOL, etc. Then regarding the impact of the COVID pandemic, as I said, 33 strategic reports with a clear intelligence picture for the whole of the European Union. I am very grateful to the information we received from the member states, because without that, it would not be possible to launch these strategic reports. Yesterday, we did distribute the report on the fake test results for traveling purposes. In that area, we did receive the information from France and Spain. We support the investigations. Together with the member states, we launch prevention campaigns and awareness campaigns. Then for the economic crime indicators, we foresee at the end of February a full report to give you a complete update, because we are monitoring indicators for financial and economic crime, in particular related to recovery and aid funds. And as we saw from the beginning of the pandemic, criminals, they are very agile. They adapt a lot and they look at the opportunities offered by the pandemic. The big changes in crime we see is in counterfeit goods and in cybercrime. But as explained and mentioned by some of you, the biggest threat lays ahead of us. It can be anticipated that a volatile economic situation with growing poverty and with social inequality will serve as a breeding ground for organized crime. What can we expect? We expect an increase in migrant smuggling, an increase in trafficking and exploitation of human beings. And in the long term, the consequences of this pandemic may manifest mainly in the area of financial crimes. The economic stimuli offered by governments are at risk, and we need to be vigilant and proactive in order to avoid criminal infiltration and criminal abuse, because we see that criminals will take over parts of the legal economy, invest their money in it, and become part of the legal society. Try to become part of the legal society. What we see is when the economic situation is going down, the power of criminal organizations is going up. How do we respond? We respond with the Economic Financial Crime Center together with member states. We invest a lot in the in these investigations. And secondly, together with member states, and in particular with the group chaired with Mr. Rizzi, we inform member states about the risk indicators they need to monitor to detect financial and economic crime. Regarding the COVID operations, we have in almost all crime areas noted an increased demand for support of Europol. In the past 12 months, we have supported several cross-border investigations, such as the Operation Shield, also operations in waste related to the pandemic, and now more support in financial crime. And the abuse of recovery funds and financial frauds related to COVID is already there. In the risk indicators I mentioned, we will also indicate indicators to detect criminal investment in real estate and criminal investment in legal businesses. Regarding criminal infrastructure, Europol is not involved at the moment. It is not in our mandate to have a physical protection of critical infrastructure, but we recognize that critical infrastructure continues to be at risk from constantly evolving threats in the cyber area. Disinformation, this is often not a criminal offense in itself, so it is not in our mandate, but disinformation aspects can also be an integral component of some of the criminal offenses. We see that the spread can originate from a variety of actors. The demand for Europol's involvement is increasing. We participate in prevention campaigns, and our EU IRU is looking together on European level with ENISA and CERTEU how we can provide support even more. Child sexual exploitation, we are there very happy with the proposal from the Commission, and also the cooperation with private parties. There is only one thing I want to say to you regarding child sexual exploitation. For instance, the non-governmental organization NCMEC in the United States, who has a lot of information to share with law enforcement, has to be distributed to us via the goodwill of the US law enforcement agency. They cannot provide us with the information themselves, and this means that we lose a lot of time in these investigations to make sure that the children will be safe. So thank you for this. I will go now to Mr. Rizzi.
Thank you, Catherine de Bol, Director of Europol. Thank you for your presentation, for your responses, for your answers, for your reactions, and best wishes. Now, torniamo a Vittorio Rizzi, della Direzione Generale di Sicurezza Pubblica Italiana, per qualche minuto finale, prima sì, della conclusione. Sì. Grazie.
Grazie.
Thank you. Well, the topics and the points that have been raised by the members of Parliament, of European Parliament and national parliaments, are all absolutely relevant and definitely highlight the critical issues, the problems that affect many areas, from borders to the economy to health, etc. That's very good food for thought. And I will just dwell on two points: the risk of infiltration of mafia organizations into the legitimate economy and money laundering problems, etc. This is one of the most strategic issues that we have dealt with during the working group on COVID meetings, as well as the exponential increase of cybercrime. as regards the risk of infiltration by mafia organizations, mafia type criminal groups, what we have seen at the moment is a sort of a new awareness or renewed awareness on the part of law enforcement of the mafia issue or the issue of the mafias, which are no longer a national problem, but have become increasingly a transnational issue that has to be dealt with and tackled jointly. At a time of economic, such a general economic crisis caused by the pandemic, those who have huge amounts of money, such as the mafia-type organizations, these organizations can indeed play any strategic role and infiltrate the legitimate economy. There's still an idea, a very widespread idea, that mafia-type organizations, especially the Italian ones, are very local, a very local phenomenon. Unfortunately, the awareness that they in fact pose a much wider threat to the whole of the European Union, this has been analyzed and assessed at the working group level, because there are not only trivial means of infiltration, such as extortion or intimidation, but now they do use very sophisticated financial transactions, financial means, such as the non-performing loans, for example. They really are able to infiltrate the legitimate economy and acquire huge amounts of huge parts of it. Therefore, our work is to monitor constantly what is going on in this field so that we can enable all law enforcement agencies in the EU to intervene soon, swiftly and well. Catherine de Bol has also mentioned innovation, technological innovation, and the challenge of the Innovation Lab. But then I would like to conclude on this point. Today, as law enforcement, we normally think of enforcement. And the COVID pandemic has in fact indeed led us to work more on the prevention side, prevention of crime. The Innovation Lab and all forms of innovation, in fact, have to go beyond prevention. For example, in artificial intelligence and predictive models. So we're not trying now to anticipate a crime, simply predict a crime, but even act before, well before a crime is committed, and be able to provide all law enforcement agencies with the means, the necessary means to counter this risk effectively. Thank you.
Grazie tantissimi, signore Rizzi. In nome di questo lavoro congiunto che abbiamo sviluppato questi ultimi due giorni, la ringraziamo tanto. And now I guess we're coming to the closing remarks, to the closing end of this couple of days of us joint venture, the GPSG control and scrutiny on Europol. First of all, I would like to thank deeply all of the participants, all discussions, all the floors that have been made have been meaningful. We've had an interesting discussion in every point in our agenda in the order of the day. Of course, we reckon it's been particularly challenging. It's only obvious. Do it on remote. With all of these difficulties in connecting with each other, sometimes it takes time, sometimes it's cumbersome. We encounter some technical difficulties, more than once. So we thank you so much for your patience, and we only look forward. We keep hoping that we will be back to real life anytime soon. I don't know when, but I only hope that we'll manage to see
ourselves physically back again to continue our work, of course, for good reason, on scrutiny on Europol. Third, I would like to thank the Portuguese presidency and wish the best for the coming semester of the Portuguese presidency. The Portuguese organization has facilitated the planning and the development of our cooperation this latest couple of days. We thank you for that. And of course, I'm announcing that next session of our joint work will be taking place under the incoming Slovenian presidency right after the Portuguese. It'll be the second half this year. It's been scheduled to be taking place in the remits of the European Parliament 25th and 26th October, this 2029. I don't know if it'll make it in time to bring us to Slovenia, but as for now, it's been scheduled here in the European Parliament. For the concluding remarks, I pass the floor again to our co-chair, Isabel Oneto. Saludo desde Bruselas. Abrazo.
Muito obrigada.
Thank you. Mr. López Aguilar, thank you for the presidency, for chairing, co-chairing the meeting, and for all your work. For this two-day meeting ran very smoothly. Now, we heard the speakers, and I want to thank them for their presentations. They contributed to our debate, which takes us to the issue of the revision and the strengthening of the Europol mandate in this new era of information. We know the pandemic surrounds us. In this era of information has strengthened the awareness and the feeling that we need to have information in these times. We need information for action. And that information has to be reliable, and so we have to fight or guarantee reliable information which help our authorities to take decisions and protect our citizens in relation to fake news and the use of for the fight against extremist propaganda and sexual abuse online, in at the end of the day to try and protect our societies vis-a-vis what we are living through and what these times help criminal gangs, help corruption. And it's important to have a view that the stronger we are as member states and as stronger as we are in terms of rule of law, the better we are able to resist corruption and extremism from the far right. And so information continues to be a fundamental issue, fundamental tool for our institutions to operate. So the importance of having agreements with third countries, the importance of having agreements to access information from private companies, what category of information, what category of private entities, that is something which is also being discussed, and we need to strengthen the cooperation between EU agencies that work with different authorities linked to law enforcement, OLAF, Frontex, i.e. even links with the EPPO, European Prosecution Office, and all cooperation is required by Europol based on rule of law. And so our concern as regards data protection and how data is processed, the big data issues, the question of data analysis, and the millions of bits of information which that analysis has to go through, and so also the use of AI. But with this backdrop, information for action, that's what we need so that our societies can be protected. I thank all of you for your participation in this two-day conference. We've reached the end. I want to congratulate all the speakers and all participants from the European Parliament and the national parliaments for a in-depth, productive discussion and the ideas they left us with us. I would like to thank also my co-chair, Mr. López Aguilar. He's left, but I thank him for his participation and for helping us with organizing this conference. As we can't invite you for a physical concert in Lisbon, I will put forward a digital possibility. The National Assembly has reached an agreement with the Portuguese National Music Museum, and the collection has a lot of treasures. We have a piece which is going to be led by the harpsichord player Cândida Matos, who's going to play a sonata from Domenico Scarlatti in F major, in a very, very rare example of a harpsichord. Please enjoy the concert and thank you for your participation.
Boa tarde. Hoje convido-vos a conhecer outro instrumento do Museu Nacional da Música, um cravo feito em 1782, que é um tesouro nacional. O cravo, feito por Pascal Tascan, foi uma encomenda real do rei Luís XVI, de França, e hoje vai ser tocado pela cravista e professora da Escola Artística de Música do Conservatório Nacional, Cândida Matos. Cândida Matos tocará uma sonata de Domenico Scarlatti, um músico régio que viveu muito tempo em Portugal e teve praticamente toda a sua carreira ligada a Portugal. Este cravo é um testemunho da história da Europa desde o século XVIII, podemos dizer, até ao século XX. Foi, portanto, uma encomenda do rei Luís XVI para a sua irmã, a princesa Maria Clotilde, que casa com um príncipe italiano, Carlos Emanuel de Cerdanha. O cravo permanece durante o século XIX em Itália, vindo no século XX para Portugal com o rei Humberto de Itália. É o rei Humberto que oferece este instrumento à Marquesa de Cadaval, uma grande mecenas da música, e após a sua morte o Estado português compra este cravo. Também o seu restauro, feito no Ano Europeu do Património Cultural, foi executado por peritos alemães, holandeses e portugueses. Espero que gostem. Até breve.